You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
I'm Tristan Taramino, and this is Sex Out Loud.
That's why I'm literally writing a whole book about my gender.
My mom and I were on BBC together talking about sex work and disability, which is something I never thought I would ever do.
Where do we learn about how to react to bodily fluids?
Kink and leather have the DNA that can transform not just ourselves, but this culture.
People have abortions more than we want to admit, and abortion is beyond healthcare. It's really body autonomy.
Someone talks about porn ruining sex. The question for me is, which porn?
I don't want anybody to fetishize my Jewish who wouldn't stand next to me at a march.
I just wanted to show polyamory in a way that looks like polyamory.
If you're excited by sexual pleasure and sexual politics, you've come to the right place.
I've been this radical queer agnostic theologian for a long time.
They think that Muslims don't have sex.
There is a very specific history of racism and anti-blackness in this country.
I don't know who started this myth that after people are sexually assaulted, they never want to fornicate again.
We really don't think that change happens without knowing what we're for and not just what we're against.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I hope you are continuing to stay safe and healthy, taking care of yourself, taking care of each other. We are still deep in it right now and deep in the pandemic. So I know that some things are lifting lightly, but I'm still pretty much quarantined. And it's pretty good that I have a podcast, right? Because I can do it from my house. Today, we are going to talk about foreplay and seduction with the help of one of the co-authors of The Ultimate Guide to Seduction and Foreplay, Techniques and Strategies for Mind-Blowing Sex. Now, this is kind of a two-part conversation because the book is co-authored and I'm having both the authors on the show, but not at the same time. Because, well, first of all, there's a lot to cover in this book. It is just jammed with a lot of content. And second of all, Dr. Jess and Marla Renee Stewart need their own fucking hour-long shows. Duh. So Dr. Jess is up first. Jess O'Reilly is a sex and relationship expert with a background in education. Her research and passion involves teacher training and sexual health, and she volunteers in schools and universities to help bring better sex and relationship education to students across Ontario, Canada. Jess is also a television personality, author, host of the podcast Sex with Dr. Jess, and an international speaker who has facilitated hundreds of corporate workshops and retreats in 35 countries from Lebanon to Costa Rica. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Dr. Jess.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy to be here.
So we've got to quiz you right up front before we get deep dive in this book. Your first question is, what is the best way to seduce you?
Oh, me? Look me up and down like a piece of juicy meat. Or tofu if you're vegetarian.
Or tofu if you're vegetarian. Great. Good call. And good choice of meat alternative, by the way, because I hate seitan. Okay. What is your favorite hack for quickly getting in the mood for sex?
Oh, well, for me, it's a fantasy, whatever puts me in the mood at that time. Like, usually, for me, it's a lot of different people in my sexual fantasy all at once.
Okay, so you, like, bring to mind that image and you can sort of, like, get there.
Pretty quickly.
Got it. Okay, so let's dig into the book. Of course, as a sex educator, when I see the word foreplay, I flinch a lot. Mm-hmm. So we have to get that out of the way. I'll just say that for people who don't understand that, just foreplay has been used as this idea that there's only one way to have sex, which is pretty heteronormative, which is like penis and vagina intercourse. And so any other thing you do, hands, mouths, fingers, sex toys, oral sex, are considered sort of, you know, an appetizer. They're not considered, quote, real sex. And I think that's, it leaves out queer points of view, it leaves out trans folks, and it leaves out a whole bunch of things that I consider sex. So, you talk about this sort of right off the top of the book, but Why did you include foreplay in the title?
You know, I think they came to us asking me to write about seduction, and I actually had such a negative reaction to seduction, because I think seduction, because of pickup culture, it has become associated with more manipulative tactics and you know, pressuring or swindling. And I wanted to include foreplay. I actually just wanted to be sex in general, because I see seduction, foreplay, and sex as, you know, one and the same, really, because sex means such different things to different people, and they all kind of flow into one another, and I don't see it as linear. And it's interesting. I feel the same way. The things that I like, the things that get me off, if you read, you know, mainstream magazines, they're basically classified as foreplay, but for me, that's my sex. That's all I really... Mm-hmm. I'm not saying I won't do the other things. I'm not saying I won't do the PV thing, but that's not my favorite thing in the world. And so, yeah, we wanted to talk about everything that could potentially be sexual and leave some of the PV stuff, because there's plenty written about that already.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I think, and I also think in terms of marketing, sometimes I like to use a word that straight people identify, because then once you open this book, it's really subversive. So it's right. Like, oh, come in, you know this word, it's totally innocent. And then it's like you're rocking their world. So it could also be a kind of Trojan horse.
Yeah. I like the idea of that. And that's sort of how I teach. I kind of teach from this perspective that we're all on the same page. Like, yeah, you're right here. Maybe you're not. But if I can lure you in with anything, whether it's like a blowjob workshop or a dirty talk guide, really, we're talking about helping you to feel good about who you are, helping you to expand and broaden your definitions of what sex might look like. And that benefits anyone, whether you're straight or queer or wherever you are located on the spectrum.
You know, one of the things I love about this book is there's a lot of very clear and specific and practical tools, like quizzes, questions, prompts, examples, which I think are really helpful to people. I think it brings it down to like a granular level. So instead of saying, you know, what really turns you on and gets you in the mood for sex, you actually say, hey, let's ask this question in a conversation with your sex partner. I think people need models for that, right? Like, I think it's actually really important, and we don't get enough models and examples about just how to talk about sex.
Yeah, I really agree. I think it's great to shift perspectives and broaden horizons. But I think, because I come from a teaching background, right? I got into this field by accident while I was a high school teacher. And pedagogically speaking, if we don't give people the opportunity to practice the behavioral skills, the theory is really ineffectual, right? We really need to give them the language. So you'll see a lot of advice, or even therapists will say, well, talk about how you feel, discuss your sexual values. But what we wanted to do in this book is really flesh it out. Okay, here are 22 questions to help you begin to dig into your sexual values. And of course, these are not exhaustive lists of questions or prompts, but for each of these sections, you'll find 8 to 20 to more pieces for you to consider. You know, like, what do you find challenging about sex? Why is sex important to you? What are the emotional components, the spiritual components, the physical components, the relational components, the mental components? Like, we really want people to start thinking with specificity about these questions. It doesn't mean you have to answer them all. And I don't think anyone who reads the book can do them all, right? Over the course of, you know, the month or however long it takes you to read the book. Mm-hmm. But we want them to start thinking, I need to do all of this. And it's not a one-time conversation. If I go back to our sexual values, you know, questionnaire, let's call it. We call it in the book a lover's inquiry. If I go back to my answers from 2 weeks ago, they might be different than they are today. And our hope, of course, is that you take these questions and you have a conversation with yourself, or you have a conversation with your partners, and then that conversation blossoms into dozens and dozens and dozens of other conversations.
Right. Because that's the thing. I think we all want people to communicate, and communication is like, is in every self-help book there is on sex and relationships. But I feel like you spell it out in specific ways that are really useful to people. You know, because I think you're right about the therapist thing. Like to say, hey guys, go home and talk about sex is too vague. It's too vague. And you guys giving some framework and some structure and some prompts and some subjects, I think can really help people. And also I was struck that like I could fill out these forms. I could have a discussion with my sexual partners about these now. Even as someone who has been with someone for a long time and has a good sexual communication with them, it's interesting to go back and say, oh, what do you like on this? Mm-hmm. So I like that. And I think the conversation in the book in general always returns to communication, consent, and mutual desire. These are things that stand out to me as your like thesis, right? Your thing that you're going to constantly remind people. So you talk about tips and techniques and all these different things, but at the core of it, communication, consent, and mutual desire. Do you think that's right?
Well, I mean, I'm happy you say that. You know, this is actually the fifth book I've written. And I have to admit that I've never really had a lot of say in the books that I've written over the years. You're kind of just, you know, I was given a book to write in the beginning of my career, and I just did what they kind of asked me to do. And mm-hmm. this time around, rather than just talking about tips and techniques, we really wanted to dive a little deeper into erotic theory, into like a broader array of perspectives, because yes, there are some great techniques you can try, but they're useless if you haven't laid the foundation for the sexual and other components of the relationship. So yeah, I hope you hit the nail on the head. And yeah, you know, it's funny, I was training therapists this weekend. I taught a 16-hour clinical training for therapists. And I took mm-hmm. some of the prompts from the book and gave them to them and said, this is what you can use in session. And they really wanted these mm-hmm. handouts. And I tell people all the time, like, you can do these together. Or you, if you have a therapist or a counselor, you can take them to your counselor and say, hey, we did this. We got stuck on this one, or we were surprised by that one. And yeah, I just think that it's really useful for everyone. I wrote the book, or co-wrote the book, and I need to follow up on some of these things. You know, my partner, Brandon, says, hey, why haven't we done that one in a while? And I'm like, I know, babe, this is for everyone else, not for us. You know, the cobbler's children are shoeless sort of thing.
Right. But that's totally.
It's a good reminder for all of us.
No, I like that idea of homework in the context of therapy, right? Is to, because it is a facilitated conversation in some way. It's someone holding your hand. And then in addition to that, this book also includes fantasies, stories, experiences of real life people, which I think is one of the best ways that people learn. They want to hear the specifics. They want to hear what other people are going through. They want to hear how other people define seduction. What counts as seduction? What counts as foreplay? Mm-hmm. I think that's another really useful part of this book.
I hope so. I hope so. And I think, you know, in writing it, it's almost, it can be used in some more kind of clinical ways. It's not written for that purpose. But I think that there's a lot of juicy stuff in here, and also a lot of stuff that can help us to resolve issues that maybe we haven't been able to name yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Because you're like I said, you're giving a structure that I feel like is so helpful. It reminds me of one of my favorite books is called What You Really, Really Want by Jacqueline Friedman. And
the Spice Girls.
Yes. It's called...
No, not the Spice Girls.
No, it's like called What You Really, Really Want, The Smart Girl's Guide to Shame-Free Sex and Safety, I think. Don't quote me exactly on that subtitle. I'm sure Raymond will pop in any minute and be like, that's not it. But anyway, it's a great book, but what's great about it is it really gives you like real questions to ask yourself. Because I think to say to someone, what are your sexual values, is a word that people are going to answer like, I don't know. You guys have such specific questions that get to the heart of that matter, that makes sense, that are easy for people to understand. And I think that's, you know, one of the features of this book that I love. Okay.
I mean, let's see. So.
Raymond has chimed in. What you really, really want, the Smart Girls Shame-Free Guide to Sex and Safety. I got it right. You can play it back. I got it right. It's by Jacqueline Friedman. Yeah. So I love that part. I love all the practical stuff. And I think people should be talking about sex more, but we can't just tell them to. We have to give them guides for it.
Yeah. And examples, like you mentioned, the real life stories. I know at one point when we were looking at length, they wanted us to cut some of those out. But again, coming from like that case study perspective, I thought they were really important because, again, we can tell you what something is. We can give you the prompts to uncover and discover and explore that. But also reading the perspectives of other people in this field in particular, in sexuality more than any other field, is so essential because it's the one area in which you never get a peek into anybody else's, you know, relationship or bedroom. Of course, there are a few exceptions, but for the most part, we never know what's going on. You know, you can have a best friend or a group of friends who joke about sex and they're open about sex and it seems like they've got these, you know, thrilling relationships with their partners, and then the next day you find out they're breaking up and it had to do with an affair or it had to do with a sexless marriage or any of those things. And so I think it's so important to see real people's stories to help, you know, to help us on our own journey. I mean, listen, any professional will tell you that that's where we do our learning. We didn't do our learning at school and we don't do our learning just from books. It's just we are in the privileged and humbling position in which everybody tells us their stories and so we're constantly learning.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I don't know, is my brain scattered today? When we come back, we're going to talk to Dr. Jess about these two concepts. I began to explore one of them when I was on her podcast, and they are fascinating. They are game-changing. This is new information, people. Unless, of course, you've heard Dr. Jess speak or you've read her writing or you've listened to her podcast. But I'm just saying, for a lot of people, this is going to be really big. So we're going to talk about core erotic feelings and elevated erotic feelings when we get back. Hello, my intrepid listeners. You know how everyone is nuts about running to the store to get toilet paper? Well, I'm much more concerned with making sure I've got enough lube. For me, lube is always a part of sex, whether it's solo or partnered play, and these days, Uber Lube has been keeping things slippery in my bed. I have all kinds of sex, mouths, fingers, hands, sex toys, cocks, and I need a lube that meets all my needs. I also happen to have a very sensitive vulva and vagina, so I need top quality. Uber Lube is a luxurious, high-grade silicone lubricant that's flavorless and unscented and made from clean, body-friendly ingredients. It's just silicone with a little vitamin E. That's all. I've even used it for massage, to tame the frizz in my hair, and to protect my thighs from chub rub. Right now, they're offering Sex Out Loud listeners a special offer. 10% off and free shipping when you use my code Tristan at uberlube.com. That's 10% off and free shipping. Just use code Tristan at uberlube.com. Uberlube lets you feel what you want to feel. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I am talking today with Dr. Jess O'Reilly. And you know, if you have a question for any of our guests or a comment about a show, maybe it's an idea, maybe it's a story you want to share about your own experiences with seduction and foreplay, you can call us anytime at our hotline at 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266. Now, we're going to play your recording on the air, potentially. So if you don't want your voice on the radio, then you should email me questions. You can email me at tristan@puckerup.com. tristan@puckerup.com. Okay, we're talking about the book that Dr. Jess co-authored, The Ultimate Guide to Seduction and Foreplay, Techniques and Strategies for Mind-Blowing Sex. And what I want to get into next is something that we talked about briefly when I was on your podcast, and really got me thinking all sorts of things. So it is the concept of a core erotic feeling. I want you to define it first and then give me some examples.
Sure. When we say your core erotic feeling, we're referring to the emotion or feeling that you require in order to potentially get in the mood for sex. So in order to get in the mood for sex, I must feel, and you know, some examples of that might be, I must feel sexy, desired, loved, playful, confident, vulnerable, excited, happy, safe, relaxed, subjugated, powerful, you know, shy. Any feeling can be perhaps your core erotic feeling. And the reason I see this as an important concept in every single potential sexual conversation and interaction is that how you respond to any sort of sexual advance or stimulus is really a matter of how you feel. Because again, we get so hung up on technique, like use lube and two hands and squeeze on the lower third or press on the head or whatever it is you do. But all of those things pale in comparison to the way you feel emotionally. So every experience, any human experience is emotional, right? I was talking about this yesterday. Whether you're ordering a coffee or engaging in a threesome, there are always feelings involved. And so if you can figure out what your core erotic feeling is, okay, and this is just what I've named it. You can call it something else if you want. But if you can figure out what your core erotic feeling is, you can do more to facilitate the experience of that feeling, as well as teach your partners how they can support you in experiencing that feeling. And so, in the book, we go through a self-inquiry to kind of help you figure out what might be your core erotic feeling. Because, of course, if I say things like, do you want to feel loved? Do you want to feel sexy? Do you want to feel powerful? Do you want to feel relaxed? Well, of course, you probably want most of those things or multiple of those things. But there's probably, one or two feelings that really stand out. And if you don't experience that feeling, sex is just off the table. And I do want to emphasize that just because you feel your feeling, your core erotic feeling, does not mean that you're always going to want to have sex, right? It means that without it, sex is off the table. And so once you kind of figure out what your core erotic feeling is, you can make changes to your lifestyle, to your attitude, to your behavior, to your relationship, to the way you communicate with yourself, to the way you communicate with your partner, so you can feel that feeling more often so that sex becomes more of a possibility. Again, I'm not suggesting that you need to have more sex, but oftentimes it's an emotional blockage that kind of holds us back. Like, I feel too distracted, or I feel too stressed out, or I'm not feeling sexy, or I'm just feeling down, or, I feel a little detached from you right now. And so really working on the emotional component for yourself and for your partner or partners becomes really of paramount importance. And then should I go on to the next feeling, Tristan?
No. Okay. So then,
okay, go.
Okay. So I have a few things to say about this. This makes so much sense. But it's such an amazing tool. Because for example, some of these might be like easy to accommodate. Like, what if your core erotic feeling is, I feel like I need to have energy. And mm-hmm. So maybe you stop having sex at night after this mm-hmm. long fucking day that has drained you of all your energy, right? Mm-hmm. That, to me, that's like a real, like, sort of simple, it's oversimplified, but you know what I mean? Say that sure. You want it, right? And so I think when I was on your show, I said my core erotic feeling was I needed to be in my body or grounded. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But now I'm rethinking it because I've read your entire book now. I think, and I don't know like the word for it. So Dr. Jess, you're going to help me. So what my core erotic feeling, I absolutely need, or it's not happening, is I need my body to feel good or neutral. In other words, as someone who lives with chronic pain.
Yes.
I have to have a low to no pain, right? And then I can't, like, what if I ate a meal and I feel like bloated and weird? That's not going to facilitate sex for me. So mm-hmm. I want my body to be sort of like working at its best capacity at the time. Mm-hmm. if I wanted my body to work perfectly, I would be in denial about my age. But you know, does that make sense? Like, I just want my body to feel good, not sexually good, but like in working order.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but would it be fair to say that you want to feel physically comfortable?
Yes. Yes, I want to feel
physically comfortable. There might be a better word for that.
Yes. Because, yes, okay. Because there's like ways in which I can be distracted or other things like mentally that I can really... change. I can change my mental state. I can visualize. I can be mindful, right? But I can't change my physical state.
Yeah. And I think that's an important piece because I know you said you live with chronic pain. I believe you have like back issues, correct?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so part of this is also accepting that we're not always going to be in the mood for sex. And that's okay because you might, and again, however you define sex, you might be in the mood for something else. Like you might be in the mood for a massage or a foot rub or another way to connect with a partner, or you might be in the mood with, you know, for something else just to connect to yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's an important piece. You know, I'm sure you feel the same, that working in sexuality, we're not trying to suggest that people need to have all the sex and more sex and sex all the time. I really want people to feel good about themselves wherever they're at. And if there are some shifts they'd like to make, can we help them with some tools? And mm-hmm. so let's say you're finding that being comfortable in your body isn't feeling particularly accessible right now or for a prolonged period, and you might just not have sex and you might be really happy with that. And then other times you might not be so happy with that. You might say, you know, like I wish I was having more sex, but unfortunately, this chronic pain is getting in the way, or discomfort in my body is getting in the way. And you might be able to say, okay, so what are some shifts I could potentially make? Like, for example, maybe I eat earlier in the evening, or perhaps I prioritize my physical well-being, going to a practitioner, or stretching the way I've been told to stretch, or not being, you know, so busy. Maybe I need to stay off my feet more. This may not specifically apply to you, mm-hmm. Tristan. I'm just you know, specific examples of what people can do to facilitate the possibility of experiencing that emotion. And oftentimes that emotion isn't just about sex, right? Like if your core erotic feeling is about physical bodily comfort, that's probably something that you seek regardless of whether or not sex is on the table. And so, I mean, I think, you know, when I think from like a therapist perspective, we'd look at different ways that behavior, attitude, and lifestyle can be shifted in small ways to facilitate more of this feeling. And it doesn't mean that you're always going to feel this way, but maybe you can feel it a little bit more often. And then if you have a partner or partners, well, first of all, I always emphasize that it's your job. You're responsible for your own feelings. Like if you ultimately are mostly in charge of whether or not you feel physically comfortable with your body or in your body. And so you have to make the changes. But at the same time, you can go and ask for support. You know, if there's something your partner does that impedes your experience of this feeling, then maybe you can talk to them about it. And in the book, of course, we talk about how to have these difficult conversations, how to bring up, you know, topics that may feel like they could lead to friction, where a partner might become defensive or withdraw or become combative. And we try and help you with language around that. But of course, humans are humans and not every interaction is going to be immediately positive. But then, and then maybe there are ways they can support you too. Maybe it's as simple as, you know, there's something physical that you've been doing around the house that is, you know, hard on your body. And if they could help out with that and you could take something else off their plate, it would be good for your relationship and also, you know, good for your body and good for your sex life. So these are never straightforward one-time conversations. These are explorations that are related to your relationship, to your sense of self, to your, you know, emotional literacy. And you think about the five love languages, right? So most people are familiar with Gary Chapman's theory that we all show our love in different ways, and you might show it through physical affection, or you might feel most loved when you receive gifts or when you get words of affirmation or quality time or acts of service. And I like that model because I know it's very accessible to many people, But I also want to stay a little bit more fluid than that model. Like, I don't have a quiz that's going to pop out what your core erotic feeling is.
Right.
This is really I use the word conversation, but it's a consideration for you and then potentially conversations with partners that are, you know, nuanced and sometimes complex and sometimes won't lead you immediately to a solution. So I really see this as a consideration more than something you must figure out right now in order to have a hot sex life.
Right. But it does, there's something about it that makes so much sense. Like, if you go over like the last five times you had sex and it was satisfying, what are some of the themes of that? Mm-hmm. Right. Just to go back. Cause that's what I did. I sort of answered kind of like on the spot when I was on your podcast. Right. And now that I've read the entire book, I went back and I was a little more thoughtful about it. And it's like, what do these scenarios have in common? And the scenario is this sort of physical comfort. So I think it also allows you to sort of look at what are the ingredients for success. Success is a weird word. It's a capitalist word. It's goal oriented. It's the wrong word. But like, what are the ingredients that you can put together to give this the best shot?
Right. So it feels more fulfilling. And it's helpful in so many ways. Like, even when people say, well, I don't have any fantasies, or I don't know how to explore my fantasies, I like going back to the thematic elements around emotion. So if you, you know, tell me about a time that sex felt good, and, you know, if you ask them what it was like, usually people kind of describe the physical. But if we can ask, you know, how did you feel during that experience? How did you feel after? How did you feel before? If it was with a partner, how are you feeling with one another? We're in this space now where we often talk about like no strings attached sex and just fuck buddies. And is it an emotional connection or just a sexual one? And that's fine. You can define it however you want. We just cannot possibly remove emotion from human experience, right? There's always an emotion. If I'm driving, I don't think of driving as an emotional experience, but if you really think about it, it's full of emotion. I mean, sitting in traffic, somebody cutting you off, someone not signaling, being late, or
crashing into the barrier in front of the gas tank, which I did yesterday and smashed my car.
What?
It was quite emotional. Oh, no. Quite emotional.
Go ahead. You okay?
Oh yeah, everyone's okay. I didn't hit anyone. I just hurt my car and my ego a little bit.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
Okay, like,
that's a random example. Oh, that happened yesterday.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Like, there are and that's the other thing is I feel like we've set up this binary, which is like, if you feel emotional during sex, it's love, right? So it's either love or absolutely nothing. Right. And that's where we've got to expand our ideas of the way that sex makes us feel, because it could simply be connected. It could, you know what I mean? It could be refreshed. It could be all these things. And that's why I think people constantly kind of discount casual sex as bad or as inferior, because it lacks some quote emotional component. Of course, it has an emotional component. It just doesn't have a love, I want to move in with you component.
Right. And like everything, it just exists on the spectrum, right?
Right. Okay. We're going to take our next break. Jess, we have not gotten through this list. Do I have to have you on a second show? Do I have to run long? What do we have to do? next, we're going to talk about elevated erotic feelings, which is related to the core erotic feeling. But I feel this is so important. And I think these are tools people can use like right now. So stay with us. You may have noticed the flowers are blooming, the grass is growing, and it's time to mow your lawn. Thanks to our sponsor, Manscaped, you can trim the hedges below the belt safely and efficiently. You know I don't like to beat around the bush, so I won't. Everyone could use a little trim of their pubic hair. Manscaped, the only men's brand dedicated to below-the-waist grooming, is here to make sure your balls, people with balls, are smooth and smelling nice. After all, it's time for some spring and, let's face it, summer cleaning. I actually like to do grooming with a partner. I find it really sexy, but I've used razors before and I'm always afraid to nick their genitals. Scary. You have to use the right tools for the job. When I use the Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0, I know it's safe and it always does a great job. The Perfect Package 3.0 kit comes with the lawnmower, the waterproof cordless body trimmer, anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer, and the Crop Reviver to round out your manscaping routine. This third generation trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce manscaping accidents. Millions of balls are about to be nick-free thanks to Manscaped advanced skin-safe technology. Subscribe to the Perfect Package and get a new replacement blade refill for your lawnmower trimmer delivered to your door every 3 months. For a limited time, subscribers get two free gifts: the Shed Travel Bag, a $39 value, and the patented high-performance reduced chafing Manscaped Boxer Briefs. You should really try this out, and I've got a deal for you to get started. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code Tristan at manscaped.com. That's right, go to manscaped.com and get 20% off with free shipping when you use the code Tristan. Your balls will thank you. Hey listeners, Tristan here. Have you been hearing the word mindfulness a lot lately? I mean, I seem to see it everywhere in the media, on book covers. It's seemingly everywhere. Here's the thing, it's not just a trend. Mindfulness actually works. For me, practicing mindfulness and meditation has improved every area of my life, really. But maybe you can't make it to a group or read a book or go to a class. No worries. Just download the app that I use, Calm. Calm is the number one app for sleep, relaxation, and meditation, and over 60 million people use it. Calm has sleep stories, which are like bedtime stories for grown-ups, and they can help you fall into a deep, natural sleep in minutes. Stories are narrated by iconic voices like LeVar Burton and Nick Offerman. They also have soothing music from artists like Sam Smith. There are guided meditations, breathing exercises, and so much more to help you relax and de-stress. For my listeners, Calm is offering a special limited-time promotion of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/Tristan. That's 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library with new content added every week. Get started by going to calm.com/Tristan. That's calm.com/Tristan. Relax, de-stress, and find your peace with Calm. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. We are talking today about seduction and foreplay with Dr. Jess O'Reilly. She's got a new book that she co-authored called The Ultimate Guide to Seduction and Foreplay. We talked before the break about the core erotic feeling. There is something related to that called the elevated erotic feeling. Now let's talk about that.
I'm so excited for the concept of the elevated erotic feeling. And so the core erotic feeling being, you know, the feeling you need to experience to get in the mood, but elevated erotic feelings are those that take sex to the next level, and you can have many of them. And so if you think back to like the hottest sex you can remember, or your hottest fantasies, or what really gets you in the mood, oftentimes you'll find this theme of, oh, it doesn't matter if there were, you know, 10 people in a forest with me and the deers were watching, or I was alone in a bed with flowers with a single partner, the love of my life. Usually there's a feeling that really takes sex over the edge. So the elevated erotic feeling is the feeling that takes sex to the next level. It makes it more intense in a sort of specific way. So it could be related to physical pleasure or a psychological thrill or emotional fulfillment or relational connection or something spiritual or any other benefit that you personally derive from sex. And I think it's important that as we talk about the core erotic feeling, we realized that the core erotic feeling means that I could potentially have sex if I feel this way. But it's not necessarily putting me, like, taking sex, you know, over the edge, like a panty dropper or a boxer brief dropper. And that's because your core erotic feeling is kind of the basic necessity, and it can actually get boring. So I think about my relationship, okay, with my partner. So if my core erotic feeling was that I need to feel loved, the truth is I always feel loved. Like, I'm in this kind of incredible relationship. We're 19 years now. And I really just always feel loved. This person always makes me feel loved. But that doesn't mean I'm always in the mood. In fact, from a sexual perspective, it can be a little bit boring for me. And so what I find is that my core erotic feeling is so taken care of, the love is so taken care of, that I can mess with, I can explore more subversive feelings. It's the reason why, like, feeling jealous during sex or feeling inadequate or feeling a bit of a threat or even feeling a risk to the foundation of our relationship emotionally is so sexually thrilling for me. Do I want those things in real life? Do I want to feel like my relationship is, you know, being threatened while we're at a cocktail party on a Tuesday night? Of course not. But because I feel, in my case, my core erotic feeling is taken care of, I can explore all these other emotions that make sex thrilling and exciting. And so in the book, we kind of encourage people to recall powerful sexual experiences and think about how they felt before, during, and after those encounters, but also how did you feel physically? How did you feel emotionally? How did you feel relationally, again, if someone else was involved? And start looking for those themes. And then we also encourage people to look at uncomfortable and surprising feelings that you have maybe associated with sexual pleasure or arousal, even if it only happened once or twice. I think these are feelings that are really worth exploring, as long as you're, you have to take care of the foundational element of the sexual relationship, either with yourself if you're doing this on your own, or with a partner or partners if you're doing it with other people. If you don't have the trust and the communication and the, you know, obviously mutual respect, then we run into challenges and you're probably not going to want to explore all of these subversive feelings. And of course, your elevated erotic feeling doesn't have to be subversive. I just find that with many clients, it tends to be. And so in some cases, we'll find that oftentimes we'll find that your core erotic feeling is rooted in kind of comfort, and your elevated erotic feelings are often tied to feelings of discomfort. So of course, you've heard the theory around, we need to cultivate so much safety in our relationships that we can afford to take some risks without threatening the actual foundation of the relationship. So similarly, the core erotic feeling, elevated erotic feeling, reflection of one another works in a similar fashion.
This also reminds me of this sort of saying in theory about how, like, fear and disgust, like, sit right next to desire, right? Like, they're not actually at opposite ends, but for some people it's like, this totally freaks me out and totally turns me on. I can't believe I'm doing this and I'm totally doing this, you know?
yes. Absolutely. And fear and disgust actually plummet when you're aroused, right? Like, they do research around your disgust factor declining significantly, right, at the height of arousal. Like, if they ask people to pick up a dirty tissue, if they have just watched something that turned them on, or, you know, an explicit video, they're more likely to touch that tissue than if they've just watched Sesame Street. I don't think Sesame Street was in the study. I just made that up.
And this is evolutionary. This is evolutionary because I think that serves us, because then we don't get hung up on, like, oh my God, bodily fluids, sure, right? Or, and it lets us play with those boundaries of things.
Exactly.
And I think about that a lot when I see something that I don't physically enjoy, which is spitting, and is happening, like, in a lot of porn. I think, you know, that person doesn't want to be spit at on the street.
No.
They're in an erotic space. Yeah. They're, you know what I mean? Their disgust has been lowered. Yeah. Their inhibitions are gone. And I can see why that's sexy.
Ooh, you know what I mean? Great example.
Rather than just being like, oh God, what is that? I think, well, the other thing I was thinking as you talked about this was that it also depends on the partner. If you're someone who has multiple partners, I think elevated erotic feelings depend on the dynamic. Mm-hmm. Because I would say with one of my lovers, I want to feel submissive, but only with this one lover, mm-hmm. right? Where we have a very specific, very trusting dynamic that I feel really safe and I can totally go there. But I wouldn't say that that's like a universal one for me with people. I'm a switch, and so I'm more likely to feel dominant. So it may change also from some sort of partner to partner. I was trying to think of mine. I guess my elevated erotic feelings are, one is that like the chemistry is so intense that it's like overwhelmed us both. Like we're ripping each other's clothes off. We can't get enough of each other. Mm-hmm. That's a elevated erotic feeling for me. Feeling desired, which could be someone's core erotic feeling.
A very common one, I think, for core is feeling desired.
Feeling like appreciated. This gets back to words of affirmation, mm-hmm. but it's like feeling like you really enjoy fucking me, don't you? Mm-hmm. Which I guess if I was dominant, I would just like make them say that. Mm-hmm. But unsolicited, if someone like really shows like their appreciation for how I know their body, how I give them pleasure, how I receive pleasure, like I think appreciation is one of mine. Yeah.
That's common, I think.
Okay. So you talked about being in, you know, you have this model relationship and it's like hashtag relationship goals. It's crazy how adorable these two people are together.
I don't know if it's a model relationship, but it's good for me.
Well, I know. Okay. Yeah. It works for you both. Yeah. So there we go. And the joy is evident when you're around each other. But this made me think of something I wondered just about you doing a podcast now, right? Because on your podcast, you sort of cover everything, like from sexual shame to pelvic floor health to porn. And after having had so many conversations, right, over the years, having done this for so long, you know, does anything surprise you? Like, do you start a show or get into one and then you think, oh, wow, I didn't see that coming, or I don't think we've talked about this before. I mean, that's the question.
Yes, I would say I'm still surprised. I don't know how to say it. I'm always learning something, right? Like every time I interview someone, there are multiple new insights I take away. So I'm not surprised by that, but I'm always happy that there's something new. And as you know, sometimes you learn more than others, depending on, because you're an expert in the field too, right? So you know a bunch about this stuff. And that's actually why I have my partner, Brandon, on the podcast as a co-host, because I find that he oftentimes, more often than not, asks more insightful questions than me because he doesn't have expertise. And one of the problems with, you know, so-called expertise or diving into the data is that we can get stuck in it. And we kind of can stop thinking like, you know, just as a human being who has all these different experiences and struggles like everyone else. And instead, I can be thinking like the professional. And so, yeah, I'm always learning. And it's nice to be surprised. It's certainly one thing I'm not surprised by is people's stories. So you probably run into this, Tristan, like people email you and they say something along the lines of, oh, you're going to love this one, or here's a case for you. And those aren't usually that surprising. Yes, every case can be different, but I'm not really taken aback by any stories because we hear so many. And while I appreciate them, there are also times when I don't really feel like hearing someone's sexual stories. Like sometimes I just want to go to a party and I want to talk about the wine, or I want to talk about what's happening in the world, right? So I'm sure that's something you run into as well working in the field.
Yeah, I mean, yes. And that's why I like it when they email me, because I can open those emails when I want,
yeah.
Right? So it's like, oh, look, some people have some questions, or this is for like an Ask Tristan segment. I can go to those emails when I'm feeling open and, you know, ready to hold space for that. But when it's in person, it's harder because people do definitely want to tell you things. And you you know, you become a kind of like sounding board, permission giver, right? The fact that your eyes don't pop out of your head, that's like very validating mm-hmm. for people. And I want to be able to do that if everyone else in their life has sort of, you know, been taken aback by the story, mm-hmm. by the desire, by the mm-hmm. fantasy, whatever it is. Okay, we're running out of time, which doesn't really mean anything because now my show can be as long as I want. But, you know, we all have places to be. So to close, I want, this is funny. It's meant to be funny. To close, I want you to give me some tips, because this is definitely a section of the book, on seduction for busy people. So just like hand out your best tip or tips for, you know, what it means to be busy, have tons of work, have tons of obligations, cannot spend time writing sexy, dirty letters to your lover, or setting the scene, you know, that takes 45 minutes. Give me some hacks for busy people.
Well, first and foremost, I think couples or, you know, people in relationships who have more frequent and satisfying sex despite being busy are good at taking turns. So we have this notion that we both have to be in the mood in order to have sex, but we actually don't. So if you consent, you can, you know, give your partner a hand or a tongue or a lip or a toy or anything else to please them, and you can enjoy the experience even if it's not necessarily about a specific level of arousal or orgasm for you. So I think taking turns is a really great thing, especially, you know, when we look at people being on different shifts and different sleep schedules. So that's fine. I'll go down on you tonight and you use this toy on me tomorrow, or whatever it looks like. So I think taking turns is important. I also think that obviously if you want to have sex, you can't wait till the mood strikes you. You have to find the hacks that get you in the mood. So whether it's reading a book, a story, or watching something sexy on TV, or accessing your fantasies, or reaching for a toy when you're fully, fully not in the mood, but seeing if you can get yourself aroused, and then that might get you in the mood. I think that we need to also be a little bit more demanding of our partners sometimes, you know, with obviously you've negotiated consent, and be able to ask them to please you. Say like, you know, I know you're not in the mood tonight, but can I just use the palm of your hand? I'll move it for you. What is that called? Like a Dutch rudder or something like that.
Right.
And, you know, we have to eroticize daily interactions. I spend a lot of time on this. I spend some in the book, but just also in my work, so that people understand that we're not a light switch, right? Like I can't go from talking about whether the dog is still constipated or whether my kid got their homeschooling done to tearing your clothes off. And so we have to be a mm-hmm. little bit more playful in our lives, inject a little bit of fun and flirtation and levity. And we do talk about flirtation in the book, so that you don't have to just, you know, turn it on the drop of a dime. You've planted the seed. Actually, Marla talks about, my co-author talks about planting sex seeds. And I think this is one of the most
yes.
important concepts. And this is all Marla's, let me be clear. And she talks about all the different ways you can plant sex seeds for different types of lovers. So we need to think about, how do we plant the seed throughout the day or the week or the month, depending on how often you want to have sex with a partner, so that we can be in the mood. And if you are busy, are you sexting? Are you being playful? You know, are you using voice notes and video and all of these incredible tools that are now not only at our disposal, but at the forefront of our minds? And then another piece of sex for busy people is the practice of mindfulness. And mindfulness, I know, is a word that's kind of getting tossed around in the West today, but really just focusing on being present. You know, what I'm doing right now in the mornings is I'm waking up and trying just to have 60 seconds of connection with my partner. I'm still pretty busy. Like our work life is still very, very busy. So I like to put my head on their chest and just kind of listen to their heartbeat for a minute, because I feel it's really grounding. It's really gratitude inducing. It makes me feel small and powerless and really appreciative of this little muscle that keeps this person going. And then I'm trying to take 60 seconds during the day, again, thinking about busy people and who my clientele are, mostly entrepreneurs, and just connect for 60 seconds. So if I see that Brandon's on a call and he's looking tense, or maybe he's not, just go up from behind and give him a shoulder massage for 60 seconds, just so we can stay physically connected, even if we're
not when he's on Zoom.
No,
not when he's on Zoom.
Not on Zoom.
No.
Yeah, if people still using Zoom, just turn the camera off. So we spend a little bit of time on mindfulness and mindful masturbation in the book as well, and digitally disconnecting, right? Like a lot of the times we say we're busy because we're scrolling through things, we're responding through things. I ask myself at the end of the night, you know, when I'm returning emails at 10 or 11 p.m., do I need to be doing this, or should I just put my phone down? Or can this wait till the morning? So it you know, everybody's busy. And, you know, we make time for the things that matter to us. If I said to you, oh, you know, tomorrow Oprah would like to have lunch with you, or Michelle Obama or whomever you want to have lunch with, you'd probably clear your schedule and make time. So we kind of have to keep that in mind, that we will make time if it's a priority to us.
Those are all good tips. Yeah. The unplugging, you know, like I don't have a TV in my bedroom. Mm-hmm. And I feel very strongly about that. Mm-hmm. Just because it's another like screen, it's another media thing. I want something to shift when I go in there. So there's not a lot of technology, and it tends to be like lower key than, you know, than my office, which is like just riddled with, it's like, there's just like art all over the walls, and it's like jam packed every square inch, something stimulating. I need something a little more chill in my bedroom. And these days, you know, I'm mostly having sex in my bedroom because it's the most comfortable for my old person body. Okay. I want to remind people that the book is called The Ultimate Guide to Seduction and Foreplay: Techniques and Strategies for Mind-Blowing Sex. It's published by Cleus Press. It's available wherever you get books. I especially encourage you to support independent bookstores, and you can do that online through bookshop.org. That's bookshop.org. For Dr. Jess, you can find her online at sexwithdrjess.com and happiercouples.com. She is at Sex with Dr. Jess on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and, you know, in the universe. So thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Great conversation. I'm you're asking questions, but I'm learning as well so much. So thank you.
And here's another quarantine sex tip from one of our partners at Pleasure Podcasts.
Hi, this is Private Parts Unknown, a podcast that explores love and sexuality around the world. And we are super excited to answer the Pleasure Podcast question of the month, which is, what is my number one sex tip for quarantine? Ooh, love this question. I feel like this is the time to try stuff you wouldn't necessarily try, right? You're locked up together. Go for it. Get weird. This is not the time for missionary, folks, which is why we're doing the Kama Sutra Challenge on our podcast. And if you want more sexy content for your ears, make sure to check out our latest series on sex in Tokyo.
I want to thank the dude who makes this possible, because he's the senior producer, he's the engineer, he's the editor, he's Raymond Johnson. New episodes of this podcast go up on podcast platforms on Mondays, so that's where you can look for your new episodes. But hey, why not just subscribe to the show? When you subscribe to the show, a couple things happen. You don't have to remember when the new one's coming out. It just automatically downloads on your device. And you're one more body in the mix for my advertisers. So that's Real Talk from Capitalism. Just want to tell you. Until the next show, I am on social media across all platforms at Tristan Taramino. And like I said, coming up in several weeks, we're going to talk to Marla, because we have so much more of the book to get through. So stay tuned for that.